Welcome to our panel on designing for convergent devices. My name is Jeff Beckham. I'm with AT&T in their online services group, and I'll be your moderator today. Today we're going to talk about how to provide a consistent user experience across various devices, whether it's web or TV or cell phone or handheld. We're going to consider what are the goals and benefits of folks who use those devices, and what are some of the challenges that companies developing apps and developing content for those devices, what are some of the challenges that those companies face? I'll introduce our panelists, starting down on my left, Adam Zabar. Adam's the Chief Executive Officer of Xanel. Xanel is the first large-scale viral mobile media network that provides the easiest way to share videos and photos on mobile phones. It's almost a YouTube way of thinking of web to mobile, mobile to web, mobile to mobile sharing. Before Xanel, Adam was a mobile media strategist to InfoSpace Mobile, Disney MVNO, and Movizo, where he led strategic planning for those next-generation mobile media applications. He was also a vice president of North American distribution at WorldRes, where his team managed more than 1,000 affiliate and strategic online travel partnerships. Prior to that, Adam was at KPE as vice president of business development and strategy. And he began his career at McKinsey. So welcome, Adam Zabar.
Thank you.
Next up to me is Ben Cumby. Ben is a senior engineer at Palm, one of course, the leading companies in mobile computing. In his current job, Ben works on new product development. So he may not be able to reveal a lot about what he's currently working on, but he has been an active software developer for Palm OS, PDAs, and smartphones for quite a while now. And before Palm, Ben worked at Palm Source as a developer, technical support engineer, and lead developer on the Code Warrior for Palm OS tools at MetroWorks. And finally, if you're using the Palm OS schedule application for South by Southwest, you can thank Ben for that. He's been the primary developer of that schedule for several years now. It combines on-device databases, wireless network, and streaming multimedia. So welcome to Ben. Next to me is Denise Burton. Denise is a principal designer at Frog Design, one of the world's leading strategic creative consulting firms. Denise has 15 years experience designing user interfaces, 8 at IBM and 6 at Frog. While she was at IBM, she worked on the first graphical user interface for AIX and explored non-traditional user interface designs and guiding their early web efforts on IBM.com and developing an object-oriented approach to UI design. In 2000, Denise joined Frog as the first design analyst and has helped grow that role to more than 40 analysts worldwide. She designed software for web, kiosk, TV, and mobile UIs for companies like Altel, Dell, Motorola, T-Mobile, and Yahoo. All right, welcome, Denise. And finally, on this end, David Richard. David is the co-founder and president of Design for Use. That's a consulting firm that provides user experience design services to clients in the U.S. and India. Prior to assuming his role with Design for Use, David was a usability consultant and senior UI designer for the last 9 years, working with both small, early-stage companies and large, established corporations. In fact, David and I worked together for a couple of years at Prodigy and SBC a few years ago. So please help me welcome our panelists today. And before we get started, I want to do a quick, kind of take a cue from Kathy Sierra's keynote speech yesterday. Kathy took some time and asked people in the audience what bucket or what group they fell into, whether it was designers or coders or money people. So I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach to that and assume that most folks here went ahead and identified with one of those three categories. But since we're going to be talking about designing for convergent devices, I wanted to find out, and I won't make, like Kathy did, make you stand up and introduce yourself to people, but I'd like to see a show of hands of folks who are designing or developing for mobile applications, for mobile UIs. Okay? And you may find yourself in more than one category. For web, probably quite a few. Yeah. And for what we were calling 10-foot UI or like television. Excellent. Okay. Good. I'm going to take a few minutes and set the scene. Let me see. I actually have not had some trouble with internet access here. Can I just reload that? All right.
Can bring up the web for you?
Yeah.
Can you see the SSID at all? Or?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do that?
Yeah. All right.
Here, I got it for you.
All right. Let me tell you where I need to go, Ben. Can we switch to yours?
Yeah.
All right. I want to show off at AT&T, one of the there you go. One of the new businesses that we're rolling out is called UVerse. It's called IPTV, Internet Protocol Television, and it's a way of delivering television over, you know, over IP networks. And I have, as soon as Ben calls this up, I'm going to show a little example that we're using now to kind of set the scene around convergence and tell our customers, our UVerse customers, what it's all about, what you can do, the things that are available.
Ben, can you get that URL? eBizNet.
And we've been focusing on, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about is called three-screen strategy, which is, of course, web, television, and cell phone. And what this illustrate, what this little demo will show is the ability to share services or share activities across those devices.
Is that going to work?
There you go.
Can I click on yours?
Go for it.
All right. Perfect. So let's start with web. So again, we're using this demonstration to help inform our new UVerse customers of some of the things that they can do across their various devices, whether it's surfing the web on your TV, using your landline phone to listen to emails, using your handheld device to surf the web or read IMs and emails. And you can see as we switch devices to talk more about things, you know, so as they understand what you can do web-based, then how the handheld device converges with some of your other devices in your home, whether it's, you know, on your television where it's viewing and managing your appointments, receiving calendar reminders on the wireless phone, either, you know, via wireless or TV or internet. Let's switch. This is our wireless phone and convergence example. Being able to see caller ID on TV, respond to text messages on the handheld device. And finally, oops, I think it's that last one. Landline convergence. So that's a little bit of what we're talking about there. And being able to just use that as an introduction and kind of understand those are the types of activities and services that we'll be talking about in our hour today. So I'm going to switch back, Ben, to mine. And we're going to talk a little bit about kind of the four considerations that you'll hear over and over as we go through the hour today. Let's go back in real quick. And these are the four that we've identified: control, branding, standards, and trust. And you'll hear these in various aspects as we go through our talk today. Control is primarily who is in charge of that experience. We want to put the customer in charge and have them control their experience on the device that they're using. Facilitating the control to the customer as opposed to being kind of the controlling apparatus or gateway there. Branding, and I think we'll have quite a bit to say about that, is to what extent do you, how far do you push your branding on various devices? How much of a experience do you make it yours? How much is it owned by that particular, either on a device or that particular service? Standards, we're going to talk a little bit about both standards from a technical perspective as well as user expectations and conventions. On what device, how well do they work across devices, and, you know, are there things that you can carry from one to the other? And finally, there's the aspect of trust in that customers who are using these multiple services, particularly with one provider like AT&T, is turning over a lot of media access points to one company. So you know, its own, it's beholden then to that company, to AT&T, for example, to really make that trust, make that bond work well, and really deliver on the customer service. So, Adam, I'm about to throw it to you to demonstrate a little bit about Xanel and keeping these kind of four considerations in mind. Talk a little bit about your service and then how it's developed and how the customers are using it. Let's switch over.
So what you're seeing on the screen is actually a live WAP screen. So this is browsing on your phone. And the reason I'm showing this as opposed to the web first is Xanel's origins were a mobile company. The team built the largest commercial mobile storefronts. So in the past, if you got a ringtone or a graphic from Singular or T-Mobile, the team that built Xanel built that. And so when we went out and designed our system, it's interesting. A lot of people go web to mobile. We actually went mobile to web, and the interface you're seeing is pretty close to our initial mock-ups, whereas the web, we actually did multiple revolutions. So it's interesting how you could have a learning experience from one to the other. So now, and the key things you had is you had the ability to feature content. So we're doing, we're working with the XPRIZE basically to do a video upload contest with them where people can be uploading content. We're working with Warner Brothers to do a viral video and picture sharing. And I guess just to take a bit of a step back about what we do, which had been mentioned at the beginning, we tried to build the simplest platform for basically people to share pictures or video from web to mobile, mobile to web, mobile to mobile, web to mobile. So now basically bring up the full screen. So this became sort of our web portal. And we tried to, I guess, from a convergent standpoint, create a similar user experience. So on both platforms, you can search for content, you can upload content, you can browse content, you can share content, you can kind of do the things that you've traditionally thought about. So if I go to my channel, basically that has my content of stuff. Basically, we're having, you know, a small picture where you can basically set your own identity. You can set a motto. If you click here, you can see more about me. So we're using some, you know, some kind of Ajax type items. We intentionally, if you look at each of these kind of uploads, we kind of set it so that it basically slightly looks like a phone. So if you look here, you know, we're not trying to overdo it, but there's this kind of edit send key across our whole interface. We use sort of this phone-like interface. So people are kind of subtly getting the message that we're a mobile company. If you click on one of the pieces of content, you'll see sort of, see the web experience.
I really found another one of your jokes. Whoa, where are they taking Steve? What's she doing? Okay. Where's Steve going?
What, I don't even know. Okay.
What?
Yeah, so kind of a short, funny little piece of content. If you now look at the equivalent experience, so now we're here on the WAP interface. You scroll down, you have both the featured content. You go immediately into your own. So here's my channel, my inbox, and people are sending me content. If I want to upload, I can click here. And if I want to browse, I can also browse channels, videos, or pics, or I can search. And so if I go to my channel, again, so you see, and this is, you know, WAP interfaces that phones support today. I have a picture of myself. I have the same sort of a motto. I have uploads and favorites, and then I have kind of more options. And so if I find that same piece of content, now ask me if I want to play it.
Oh, where are they taking Steve? What's he doing?
Where's Steve going?
I don't
even
know. Okay.
What? So, you know, the panelists today will talk a lot about the design and kind of how you think about that. Really, what was the challenge for us coming from a mobile background is we built sort of a very, I'd say, kind of simple core experience. Some of the guys on our team try to call it Golden Pathway, which is basically uploading content, sharing, and viewing, and we wanted to repeat that as many times as possible. And we're probably the first one in the United States that does viral mobile content distribution. And the challenge for us was actually not to get too complicated on the web, to keep it simple enough that that same experience was echoed, yet it basically used kind of web, you know, the way that we think about the web and the way we navigate the web.
Did you find, Adam, you talked about you really, I think by a show of hands earlier, it looked like a lot of folks are kind of going from web to mobile or web to TV, going from mobile to web. Did you find that sort of influence the simplicity in your design?
Yeah, it did. I mean, to be honest, the very first, and we talked about this a little bit last night, the very first web designs were hugely complicated because we kept saying, well, there's all this white space. We better fill it up with something. You know, so you can see kind of on the lower right, like, it was painful for our team the first time to go, well, wait, shouldn't we put something there? We're used to mobile screens that, you know, you take every inch. And so, yeah, it basically took three revolutions, and we basically threw out completely the first two designs to actually try to keep that simplicity.
Okay. Excellent. Sure. Thank you, Adam. Ben, I want to talk to you a little bit about the South by Southwest schedule that you put together. Talk a little bit about the challenges you had, and you dealt both with mobile developers and web developers. Is that right?
Yeah. So with South by Southwest, we've been doing a mobile version of their schedule now since 2002. And it originally started out as a very simple, you know, taking the content they have on their website and putting it on the Palm device. Because back, you know, what is it now, 6 years ago or 5 years ago? It's been a long time. At that time, people had PDAs, but they generally weren't connected. They were kind of silos of data that they carried around. So having a schedule on there that just was a simple schedule was pretty nice. But now we've gotten into a world where, you know, the most common thing out there is something like a Trio here. We have a net connection. I mean, there's a site like sssw.mobi, which does a pretty good job of giving you a lot of static information. So when we were figuring out how to adapt this app, how to evolve it and make it more useful, what we wanted to figure out was some ways of actually taking advantage of the fact that you have a device, you have all the different features like the keyboard, the five-wing navigator, the web connection, to make it a lot more interactive, a lot more useful than just a simple web schedule. So one of the things, just kind of, you know, in working with South by Southwest, every year they change their logos, they change their fonts, they sometimes change their colors. So when we come to this, we have to adapt it, and the logo we have for the app this year is the Platinum Star, which you see on the platinum badges, some of the signage. Since this is for the entire festival, not just interactive or music, we went with that. Going into the application here, you know, we have a few things. We have kind of a few branding areas here, which are subtle, always there, but at the same time, not something that gets in your way. So we have the South by Southwest logo up here. This area has kind of been used for different advertising. Last year, the panel, the schedule was branded by Yaris, one of the South by Southwest sponsors. This year, we have the logo for South by Southwest Mobi. And if you actually go to the About screen here, there's the larger version of it. And visiting, one of the things we try to do is, now that we have kind of web connections going all the time in the Trios, is having it so that you could very easily jump to things like the Mobi website straight from the application. Another area where we've kind of done branding or coordination with them is dealing with just the various colors. So, like, Interactive has a red-orange color scheme, whereas the orange film had more of a red color scheme. And if we go onward into the music festival, we'll see that they actually use more of a green color. And so events dealing with music have that kind of color. And so we, you know, tried to sync up with what they're doing, have a similar design. But on the other hand, we're taking advantage of what we can do on a device where you have control over your own data. One of the big things in the schedule is Mag South by Southwest. So this is kind of a custom list you build up in the schedule as you go through it and say, this is interesting. So you get a very quick, you know, view of all the events, which for some way you've tagged as they're on your personal schedule. And when you actually go into the details of an event, like, oh, let's say there's a panel going on here on Sunday morning. That sounds interesting.
No, how early on Sunday morning would you
say?
Yeah,
very, very early.
Yeah.
So we have kind of the full description text here, some timing information. This checkbox up here is something you can tap to add it to your list quickly. And then what we did is to integrate further with various kind of web things. Every event has a web link where if you click on that, then you go to the Mobi site to give you more information about that. And you can, you know, connect with the South by Southwest website. Going back to the application, if you are doing something in the Music Fest, we also did some multimedia work. Since we go through, some of these have these headphones. And here we decided to link up with a program called Pocket Tunes, where if you click on this, it'll go to the South by Southwest site and start streaming the actual audio sample that the artist uploaded for the event. Unfortunately, that doesn't work on the simulator, but another key thing that we did this year, which is really cool, is here in the venue details, we have a show in Google Maps, where if you have the Google Maps application installed on the Palm, it'll jump into that and, you know, just show you the actual location, and you can choose the satellite or map view, anything you normally do with Google Maps on the desktop. So, you know, this is something we've been doing for a few years. There's been a big challenge in keeping up to date with the South by Southwest people. Every year they come with new ideas. And as they add more and more events, the challenge of getting all that data squeezed down to actually fit on the on a little application that you can beam to someone in a minute or two has been kind of daunting. But I think it's something that's been a lot of very useful for a lot of people here at the Fest, and it's been a great way to kind of take the South by Southwest brand and put it on another thing that's really useful for the attendees here at the conference.
Fantastic. Thanks. You say that the festival folks want to add more and more things every time. Is there something that you would like to have on there that you're not able to because of certain constraints?
Yeah, well, there's a few things. I mean, we've had issues on how much data we can fit there. So, like, the panels don't list the panelists in the database at the moment.
Okay.
The film, you know, in the music fest, we don't have room to put the band bios.
Okay.
But, you know, as we evolve our technology and, you know, get more space in the devices and faster networks, I mean, we can both put more data on the application, but we also do the web link. So that if you want to get more information, you can then use the web, which is, has a much bigger memory than your cell phone.
Fantastic. All right.
Cool.
Thanks, Ben.
Okay.
Can you switch your video thing to mine?
Oh, so are you on?
No, I need that back. So, Denise, I wanted to ask you, the title of the panel is, of course, Convergent Devices. But as we talk about this, we're talking about more than that. We're talking about services, and we're talking about even design. So I'll run your slides, if you don't mind, and just let me know how you'd like to go on that one.
So so first, I just want to start off with, you know, well, what does convergent mean? It means a lot of things to, you know, it just means different things to everybody. So if we're talking about a convergent device, it's really about one device that has many uses. And there's a lot of controversy about that. Some people want one device and they want it to be elegant and they want it to do that one thing and do it beautifully. And other people want the convenience of a device that can do multiple things. And as technology gets better, those devices are getting better and better. But as a designer, there's challenges because you're designing, you may be designing part of that experience and the user is using that device for a lot of other things. How does your application fit with those other things? So if we talk about convergent services, we're talking about one service that lives on a lot of devices. And so that's a lot about the conversation today. And if a lot of you are, you know, have done web applications and now you're having to move them to a 10-foot UI or a 2-inch UI, you know, you're dealing with some real challenges. And we're going to talk about what some of those challenges are. So the other thing about convergence is there's also convergence in design. And as designers and developers, you know, you really have to think about the bigger space. It's not just about your application. So when it comes to an ecosystem, sometimes you're designing for a specific product that lives with a bunch of other products, and that's sort of that business ecosystem. But there's also the user's ecosystem. So they're using your application, and they're using it in relation to all the other things that they're doing. So how do you live within that space? How do you help? Users have expectations in that space. How do you meet those? How do you give them something more than they even thought they could get? You know, how do you go beyond that? So you really have to understand that ecosystem. Another thing is touch points. You know, your application could have a lot of touch points with a customer. So a really good example of that is Mini Cooper. Their website is such a strong brand and has a certain tone. And any kind of media that they send to people who buy a Mini Cooper, all of that is completely on brand. Their showrooms on brand. So all of their, every element of that experience has been addressed. So, you know, if you really want to, like, you know, resonate with a user, you have to consider those touch points. So some people think of that as convergent. Cross disciplines is another way of being convergent. So at Frog, we're really lucky. We have business strategists, technologists, designers and every kind of designer imaginable, ID, information design, visual design. So user researchers. So we're lucky we can like put all those minds together to solve a problem. But if you're, you know, by yourself working on a problem or you're with a small team, you know, pull in the people that can help you with that. You know, stop and put a different hat on and think about it. I'm doing this thing for the web today. Maybe I should be thinking about doing this for mobile in the future. How's that going to affect the things that I'm thinking about while I'm designing this application? And then there's this sweet spot when it comes to disciplines. And this is a little tricky, so it depends on the work that you're doing. But if you think about it, like interaction designers, we really think, and that's, I'm just speaking for myself, the way I think. I really get so much into, you know, that, the UI of that, you know. And then the idea is like, oh, you know, thinking about the buttons and the sexy casing and the shiny chrome. And then there's this space in between, you know, where the user uses the device and the UI. And there's this sort of sweet spot that sometimes we forget about. And so you just kind of have to stop and think about it. And maybe an example, a good example of that's like haptics. Like you can do things from a UI perspective that is born out in the idea of the product. So, you know, anytime you can affect that, you know, try to affect that experience because that's what makes it a really powerful thing for a user. You know, like if you're scrolling, it can be a nightmare to scroll on a mobile device. You know, are there ways to like speed that up so you can have acceleration and deceleration? Little things like that really, you know, they mean something to the user. And then another thing and maybe I cheated by putting design system under convergent, but if you're trying to design for a lot of different things, it's really great if you have this base. And this design system can kind of be a base where you understand the framework. And in Adam's case, you know, very simple, clear things that that application needs to do, you know, and that should go across all of the different experiences. So just certain elements, if you can capture all of them there, then you can stop and you can start to think about the trade-offs that you have to make when you do each device. So having this, building out this system, sort of an object-oriented approach to your design, really helps you when you're working across different devices. So the title, in the description, there was this discussion about how to design a consistent experience across devices. Don't be consistent. okay, that's a strong statement. I don't like to say don't. but basically, you really have to be careful. You don't want to just be consistent for consistent's sake. So this is just a great quote from Emerson.
Before we move on, I want to get David to jump in. So do you agree or disagree with the consistency statement?
Unfortunately, I agree.
Okay.
The consistency statement, we do a lot of work with independent software vendors for folks like Jeff's company, service providers, to help them actually do a lot of editing. And, you know, one of the things that we hear over and over is, you know, we really need our device, we really need our, you know, application for a mobile device to be consistent with our web-based application. And, you know, we have to say over and over and over again, no, you know, please, no, please, no. We spend a lot of our time really largely as editors to try to convince people to cut things and to pare down the experience to be the right experience for the right device at the right time, really.
Excellent. All right, Denise, I'll let you continue now.
Sure. So when you're thinking about designing for another device, so we're kind of focusing this conversation into convergent design, so designing an application that's going to run across multiple devices or service. So there's some things that you really need to take into consideration because when you're used to working in one medium, so let's just say the two-foot, like the PC, and especially a PC that's not like a touch PC, so qualify that. And so, you know, you're used to this environment that people work in. And so sometimes you have to step back and think about, well, in a mobile device, you know, they may be standing there looking at that thing in the bright sun. They may be in pitch black. They may not be able to see the keys. You know, people don't look at their phones a lot of times. You know, so, you know, how does your application support the environment that the user is going to use it in? So those are some things that you need to think about. What are the activities that the user is trying to do? So you may have a really, you know, like, I don't know if anybody here doing kiosk design? Ah, okay. So in the kiosk space, you know, you may be in a situation where you're in retail and, you know, somebody's got the baby hanging off their hip and there's just, you know, bright lights and, you know, the screen's getting really smudgy. And so a lot of these things you have to take into consideration, where it's a little different if you're designing it for, like, you know, the quiet space in the coffee shop. So those sorts of things really affect environment, activities. Is it, I got to get to the point of purchase. The idea is get you in, get you out. That activity, you need to make it super simple, quick, easy to get through that, where you don't give them, you try to automate things for the user so that they don't have to spend a lot of time there at the kiosk. Whereas at the coffee shop, you might want them to stay a little longer. So those sorts of things affect how you design your application. Huge one that we're going to talk about a lot today is a device. So you really have to design for that device as well. You need to think about the constraints that you have with the display, constraints with the input devices that you have, and sometimes the different platforms even on the same device. So just like the browser wars, you know, this can happen for you on other devices as well.
Before I go to the next, I was going to ask Adam about that, because with your company, you have to make affordances for all kinds of devices, right?
Yeah, so I mean, we port basically to all the different handsets that support video. There are 100 million handsets in the U.S. that support video, but we have to transcode basically to 10 different formats. We have to basically size the media on the fly to all the different media sizes. And then we also have to deal with everyone's on different network speeds. So some people, and how many people know in the audience, are you on a 3G phone, like high speed? Anyone? 2.5G? Slow, probably almost everyone.
And herein lies another problem in that we have to make some assumptions about what people know and don't know about their own devices.
Right. A lot of people don't know. And so this is a really important thing, which is in the mobile ecosystem, part of it's the device itself, and then part of it is also the network speed. So whereas we're seeing on the web pretty much a broadband experience now, that is not true on mobile. So a very simple thing that we did as an example is if I send you a video and you get it through the XANL service, we do immediately when you try to grab that piece of media a header lookup. So we detect what your phone is. We say, oh, this phone supports streaming, so then we stream. Oh, this phone supports download, so we download. But if it's a big media file and you're trying to download it, we'll say, oh, this is a big media file. Your phone supports download, but you're on a slow network. Therefore, we'll ask you the question, would you like us to deliver this to your email? And so it's a really important thing, whereas on the web, we've kind of gotten used to, oh, you've got a media file, ship it to the next person. Mm-hmm. Within the mobile space, actually, based on the handset you have and based on the network speed you have, and also a data plan. If you don't have a data plan on mobile, which everyone kind of takes for granted now on the web, you better not be downloading a 1 to 2 megabyte file.
It's expensive. So some of the things, so, you know, those considerations that we talked about, environment, users' activities, what are they going to use it for, and the device, these bring up these are some of the major challenges that we face. So when we work across designing convergent experiences at Frog, we see that there's a lot of challenges with screens. So a couple things about that. So can we go to the next one real quick, and then we'll come back? So what you have is, you know, even though you've got this one application that you're putting on a mobile phone, mobile phones, the resolution changes from phone to phone, orientation changes. So these are all things that you need to consider. If you have a design where your pieces are sort of, you know, little objects, things can fade away and things can come forward. So in the really small UI, there's only one, you know, one line of information about your stock.
Can you go back?
Sure. Other things about screens. So if you're designing for instance, for the television space, you know, you need to deal with, again, the environment that someone's using that in. You know, it's a nice, usually family environment or a dark environment. You know, think about, you know, how you design for that. And there's real challenges with the resolution with the screens. Sometimes, and the technology that's going to present your image, on the screen. You might think that branded font that you use for everything is going to be just great. It's so cool. But it may not render at all. So you've got to test like mad. You know, really, you've got to test on the platforms to see if it's working appropriately. Color support's another one. You have to be careful with gradients, for example. So, and then there's the obvious one. You know, it's big screen. You got to, you know, and people are looking at it from a distance when it comes to TV. So you've got to blow everything up. With a kiosk, you know, you've got to have everything big so users can touch it. Well, with a mobile interface, everything comes down. You know, so all of these things affect, you know, how you're designing for that device. Input devices are also huge. Sometimes you don't know what that's going to be, so you need to design for like a base set. And then sometimes you do know what it's going to be, but there's these funny things that show up. So, you know, on a TV interface, there may be this zoom button and you're like, what's that? You know, because the ID got there before you got there. But, you know, now you've like, oh, my interface needs to zoom. Well, how's that going to happen? You know, so you really have to understand like all of the controls that you're going to be dealing with and how to best take advantage of those controls.
And another thing, you know, to that point, you know, one of the things that we talked about was basically providing the affordances so people can understand when there's redundant mechanisms for input, right? So that if there's keyboard input versus mouse input, or keyboard input and mouse input, something on, you know, that we talked about on the Palm device, stylus input versus the joystick, the toggle input.
Well, so one thing, you know, in the application when I first did it, it was for the PDA, so it was all stylus input. You pulled out the pin, you tapped on things. But once the Trio started coming out, people suddenly had a five-way navigator, they had a keyboard. So what we were able to do is to keep the pin interface, but then also, you know, make it so you can navigate around with the five-way and even add kind of deeper control. So, you know, if you're in the schedule, you can hit the T key or the V key to switch between viewing by time, viewing by venue. There's lots of little shortcuts we added so that people that use it a lot can get a deeper user experience and be able to work with it quicker, whereas everything's still very discoverable for people that are just casual, just getting into the program.
And again, from a design perspective, we want to be providing the affordances so that people understand there are the alternate means of navigating through the content.
And another place where you can take advantage of that too when you have devices is proximity. So like with soft keys, it's putting your soft key, if you know, I think we can all live in a world without soft keys personally, but you know, but you line that up with, you know, the soft keys. And so that proximity. And then on remote controls, lots of times you have these special, you know, buttons and they have color to them or they have a specific icon on them. Well, you can bring that into your interface so that the user just can associate, you know, those buttons with the action. So another really big challenge when you start to move into working on these different devices is the focus state. So like when you come from a windowing environment where it's lots of windows and there's lots of sections within a window and people can point and click and drag and drop, and all of a sudden you're in a four-way nav. It's just like, whoa, you know, how do I get the user through this? How do I help the user know what they're looking at? And it gets even trickier when you zoom in and you're like looking at a picture and you go to the next picture. Well, you know, if you take, like me, I take like 5 or 10 pictures of the same thing because I'm trying to get the best picture. And so, you know, you go to the next picture, it doesn't change very much. Well, how does the user know they just got to the next picture? You know, you don't want to be sticking, you know, 1 of 10 everywhere. You want to make it nice. You want to make it subtle. So this is where animations and transitions can really help you to help a user know this is where the focus is. Things have moved. And so you want to give a user a sense of where they are, what's going on. And that goes to user feedback because, you know, in a browser, we take it for granted. And in PC application and Mac application design, you know, there's that status bar. And that's going away, too, in some cases, because there's other interesting ways of doing status on a PC. But the thing about, like, on a mobile device, it can get kind of tricky about how you show feedback. And, you know, there's issues with bandwidth and things like that. So there's subtle ways to design in, you know, little animations to let the user know what's happening. So those are things that, you know, you really need to be mindful of when you're working in the mobile space is how do you let the user know what's going on?
And sometimes subtlety is overrated. I mean, I think all of us have had the experience of, you know, popping in a DVD, pressing the arrow keys and not knowing where the heck we were because, you know, in a sort of designerly aesthetic fashion, they've hidden the affordance to tell you where you are, you know. So hopefully there's some DVD designers, menu designers here in the audience who can take away the fact that, you know, you have to have this balance between subtlety and not subtlety, subtlety and good user feedback.
And lastly is users' expectations. And this is really tricky when you're designing for a new platform. So when I asked folks, you know, well, what's an example of one of your favorite convergent, you know, services, and what's an example of something you didn't like? And several people mentioned that, you know, they love their experience on their TiVo. So on their set-top box, they really like being able to go through and program. They find that experience really enjoyable. And then TiVo made programming available on the web, and they were just really disappointed. And so I think this is a really good example, you know, to both of you guys, points that you made, is that just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. So, you know, users had this expectation of this clean, simple experience, and they didn't necessarily want all of this extra functionality. So, you know, these are challenges and considerations that you need to take into what are the user's expectations for your application in that space.
Okay. We're getting about 15 minutes to the end, so I want to leave plenty of time for questions. If you have any questions, you can stand up. There's a microphone about midway back. Let's ask, if you would mind identifying yourself as you ask a question, and then if I need to repeat it, I can certainly do that. While you guys get ready to do that, I'm going to ask the first question. I'm going to ask it to David. What's your opinion on the place of advertising on some of these convergent devices?
I unfortunately am I'm probably more of a purist in terms of user experience for these things, and so my general take is that advertising tends to get in the way of the things we're doing, and there are obviously the need from the service provider's part and from the content provider's part to figure out how to sell and to generate revenue. But I'm always an advocate for the user, which is to say, if it's off task, if advertising happens to be off task, then unfortunately you need to figure out another way to make money. You know, I think there are some, when you're in a wait state, and you can probably speak to this because you guys have done this, or you've seen this demo, but when you're in a wait state, you know, things like advertising and cross-selling and upselling make sense. But again, when you're sort of on task, anything that gets in my way is simply an aggravation. It actually takes you off brand and sort of, you know, lessens the goodwill that your consumers have for your brand.
Is part of your business advertising at all?
Adam? Yeah, can you actually put up my screen? I wanted to show something. So one of the biggest things that you're starting to see both in kind of the mobile 2.0 and web 2.0 is kind of an integration or kind of branded entertainment, where there is sort of this kind of seamless or slipstream between what is an experience that a consumer or a professional entertainment company has created and what is something that's a branded entertainment. So as you look, for example, we could look basically, I guess, at both screens. We'll go first to this one. So this featured content is basically there to create both a fun experience for the user, but there's also a branded entertainment piece. So if you look at this 300 contest, this is the movie that just launched. We did a promotion with Warner Brothers. We'll actually go to the channel since it's a little easier to see on the web. Hold on just a second. So basically we did, you know, we're a channel-based format. XANL stands for zillions of channels. We allow anyone from a small user to a major brand to put up content. And in this case, we did a partnership with Warner Brothers where they could create a channel on our system that had their brand elements. It integrated both clips from their films, clips from their mobile video game, and we created a contest around this, which was basically the first of its kind in the U.S., which was the first person to virally send around the 300 video or a clip from the movie 300 times would basically win a prize. So this is a thing where we're providing sort of a fun user experience, but it's actually branded entertainment, and it's a way that we actually cannot kind of totally distort our experience, but actually bring it into a consistent experience.
Excellent. Any questions out there? Yes.
Hi, my name is Chris Fullman, emerging technologist from AgencyNet. One of the biggest issues I've seen with non-PC devices with entering in data, either through a cell phone, through the T9 interface, or touchscreen, which is a pill to enter data if the screen gets misaligned, or the tiny little keys, or using a gaming console like Xbox or PS3 or Wii, is that most of the forums tend to ask a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten a little easier with the Wii because you can move the remote a little faster. And depending on how much coffee you've had or how little sleep you've had, it can be a little challenging. But they just tend to ask for a lot of data. Is there any solutions you found to make it as easy as possible for them to enter data without restricting the type of interactivity they would expect? Or any suggestions you might have?
So there's a couple different things. And, you know, everything is based on that task. So for search, type ahead is a clear one. So as a user is putting in, you know, their choosing their letters, it starts to, you know, give you a list and it filters down the list. So anytime you can give the user an option to be able to put data in but also choose it from a list, type ahead also works really well when you're, you know, entering in phone numbers and looking for contacts. So that's one example for data.
Add, I mean, one of the things we were talking about last night when we met together was this kind of idea of taking your application, making it part of a bigger ecosystem. So rather than entering a lot of data in your mobile app or on your web top device, have it so that, oh, if you need, you know, basically have simple choices there, but maybe link it with some larger web application, some other medium where it's easier for the user to enter data and then have an ability to view that. Like in our schedule app, I mean, really the only data input we have is a checkbox. Do you want this to be on your list? And we thought about doing more complex things, but it just didn't make sense. But I mean, TiVo is a great example. They do some advertising for other things where instead of, you know, you entering a lot of data on there, you just say, yes, I'm interested. Then they send you an email or they send you something in the physical mail. And, you know, kind of move the interaction out of the limited area into something where you have more bandwidth and more, you know, the user feels better working with them.
And I also think, I mean, I think this is an evolution what we've seen on the web in terms of the type of questions that people ask and the type of information that people are soliciting was, you know, previously driven by marketing people who are trying to do all this sort of data gathering. And I think that it's a sort of progressive grabbing of data that becomes more appropriate. And so as we've seen that kind of happen on the web, I think we'll probably also see that happen on mobile devices, which is to say, if I intend to have a long-term relationship with you, I don't need all the data right now. I don't need, you know, I only need the data that's on task. And if I want to gather other data, it's something that may happen over the lifetime of my relationship with you that I get a little bit now and a little bit later and a little bit later. So I think it's just a learning curve that we're all going up, you know, in terms of understanding that we're in this for the long haul. You know, we shouldn't be in this for just, you know, a two minute engagement or 2 minute relationship.
Yeah. And another really good one is just don't make them put the data in. There's so many ways around it actually. Yeah. And so like with the phone, there's min or mid or pid or who knows what the acronym is, but it like holds the information about a user. So like, let's say, can you switch over and I'll do that. We can flip forward to the cell top one. You know, so you might know information. It's always at the very, very beginning of the presentation.
I gave away the finish. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. So there's this one particular cell that sits on the user's phone that's weather, for example. So, you know, one of the things that a lot of data sometimes just comes over with the phone when the user gets their phone and they subscribe to their phone. So you can default it to, you know, based on the zip code of where that user's from, you can go ahead and at least put one default in so they don't have to go put other things in. And, you know, other things are, again, providing lists. So, like, if you were going to do, like, an RSS reader, you would give them a list of the top ones so they wouldn't have to, like, you know, there's a ton of ways around, like, how they could put the data in. So the first one is just don't make them even put data in. Another one is context. Like, context is wonderful. If you can design to context. So a great example of this is something that Apple actually missed. So when Steve Jobs did his, you know, I'm on the phone with my buddy here, and he wants me to send him that picture from somebody's vacation. He goes and he finds the picture, and then he chooses to send the picture to the guy that he's talking to. And he goes into this, you know, email interface, and he types the guy's phone name, you know, his information in. And it's like, well, you know, context. You know who you're on the phone with. Send it to the person on the call. So, you know, look for, like, all of those economies, you know, anywhere you can. It's just, think of ways to
test. Other questions?
Sure.
Hi, Scott Robin from Tapity.com. How do you feel about the challenges of conveying the experience of one device to another, like say using web to show how a device works on the phone, or say conveying that how a TiVo is going to work? Does that present a challenge for how people are going to see that experience, or building that trust with users, and how they're going to feel about that experience?
I'm going to let you go,
Ben. This kind of goes, actually, maybe this would start with Adam. How do you convey that experience of what that's going to be like on a phone from your website and vice versa?
Well, one of the biggest things that we realized in mobile is a lot of people don't know that much about their mobile phone. I mean, as an example, when I ask people in this audience, do you have 3G, 2.5G, 2G, most people don't know that. And so one of the things we intentionally did is try to make it feel really simple. And so the questions are always, they're never like, do you want to SMS this to yourself? Do you want to go to our website? Because a lot of people don't know those acronyms and they don't know what that means. And so we actually said, do you want to send a piece of content to your friend? Enter their phone number. So a lot of what we were doing is to try to take the simplest pieces of an experience, which were upload content, share content, view it, and within that context, invite people basically to bring their content from a web experience to a mobile experience. But at no point in the experience do we ever try to introduce something they don't know. So in our case, if you actually find a piece of content, we can actually go back to the screen if you want to. So if you go to our homepage, you know, the very first thing we wanted to do is to say, hey, get this on your phone. We don't tell you have to do anything more than just enter your cell number. Click I agree to terms and conditions, and then click get Xanel. So really, we tried to make it very simple, really around the minimal number of things that you had to do. And the same thing's true if you go to, you know, looking, you know, if you browse our video catalog as an example, you see, you know, we're kind of subtly suggesting again that we're a mobile company. If you click send, again, and you put in your name, you can put in a mobile email address, and you click send, and again, you're done. On the user side, once you receive that on your phone, you basically get an SMS message that has a link in it. If you click on that link, it takes you immediately into the experience. It doesn't force you to register or do anything else, and immediately you're looking and basically moving through a mobile experience.
We face the same problems, but even that level of getting somebody to enter their phone number and receive something on their phone, there's a level of trust there because the phone is a very personal device. You know, a computer might be a little more distance from you, but a phone is something that you get offended when telemarketers call you and you do things like that. So you're more aware of what's coming into you. So there's that level of trust saying, I'm going to give you a phone number. I don't really know what the experience is going to be like. You know, how do you relate that before you even get that phone number? We're having the same problem as well.
Yeah, we actually have, if you look here, why do you need my cell number as a provider of mobile content? We need it in order, you know, so we, throughout the experience, both of the FAQs, kind of, you know, in the terms and conditions, over and over, we say, hey, we're keeping your information private. We're not sharing it with other people.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a very, I think it is a core part of the experience is trying to actually establish that trust.
And I think I think the experiences have to be structured so that trust is gained over a period of time. Like I said, this is a long-term relationship we're trying to have with people. And so you may actually structure the tasks of your application to get trust in small bits and pieces. So as you're going further along, you're actually asking people to jump through bigger hoops or extend more trust to you to give you more data. So, I mean, I think it's a thing that's happening over time, and you got to make, you know, simple, small wins and small things of trust, just like you wouldn't open up to somebody you just met, you know, unless you'd been out to the frog party last night. it's kind of the same thing with our applications.
Yeah. One more comment, you know, a lot of it's also giving users choice. I mean, I guess you can't say that enough, but for example, when you register on our service, you do need to enter an email, but it's your choice as an example, whether you want to put in your phone. Okay. At some point, you'll do that if you want to be broadcasting to your phone. But,
sure.
You know, if you want to, literally, you could use the service only as a web-only experience, or you could use it as a mobile, or you could use it for both.
And it's people basically understanding the value of what they're giving you. I mean, the value has to be immediate. They have to understand that, okay, you've asked me for this thing, I gave you that thing, and wow, now I get this great value for that. It can't be kind of hidden.
All right, I got a couple more minutes. I know you've been waiting for a question. I'll let you go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jay Hsu. I'm actually from Toons and Design is my company. I'm actually an animator and motion graphics guy. Now, one of the things is I got into Flash when it was like Flash 3. And so I've been, you know, gradually, and you get to that creative director state where you actually, your day is meetings and phone calls and emails, right? And then now I've gotten back into the content side. One of the things I've discovered, and this is kind of a question, is most of the guys that are decision makers in video and industry, and a lot of these guys are guys that don't even have PDAs yet, and they barely know how to use their own phone that they just upgraded with Singular and everything else. Now, you have this situation where, like, the iPhone is coming out, and I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I just upgraded a couple years ago to, you know, my Palm, but what I know is sometimes when I push the wrong button, it starts over. It crashes, and my Palm goes, oh, great. So I'm like, screw getting on the web now. You know, I got other shit to do. So the thing is how do you break through that barrier? Because you're already gotten a situation where they don't understand this technology. Now, instead of one web page, they know from experience it's taken months to just do their web page. And now you've got all these additional formats and everything else that you got to sell them on. How do you sell people on that idea that, okay, yeah, your web guy doesn't know how to do this stuff. And instead of just one web page, you've got to account for all the different screen devices. And then they're talking return on investment. Right. So in order to have this industry grow, how do you, that's a challenge. How do you convince a return on investment on this?
I'm going to turn to you, Adam, given that you probably have had this kind of discussion with getting Sandal started out.
Yeah. So we went out for funding. We raised a $6 million Series A round. And the consistent question we got from the investors is, well, why do you need $6 million? You know, because if you look at Web 2.0, traditionally it's much less expensive. And, you know, simple examples are that YouTube transcodes one file format. We transcode 10. They basically deal normally off of, you know, one operating or maybe two operating systems. We deal across multiple. We deal across, you know, every carrier has their own network. And then we have to go across every handset. And really, you know, what you end up with is, hopefully a very simple user experience on the front end, but on the back end, actually a matrix. I mean, it literally is this user type to this content type to this network type to this device type to this carrier. And that creates a fairly complicated, you know, device to user to content mapping. And so in terms of return on investment, I mean, I think I can speak to it from a business sense. These guys, I guess, can speak to it kind of from a design company sense and working with companies. I think there's a general sense right now that, you know, obviously there's been an explosion of content in the last year or two on the web. Mobile basically had this rapid ramp growth, and then about 6 months ago, basically data went flat. So if you look across ringtones, graphics, even video on mobile, it's the same 20 million people out of 210 million people in the United States that do this. And so in the venture community, they basically funded a series of companies, including companies like Xanel, because there's a latent demand. If you go out and you talk to young kids, talk to teenagers, talk to young adults, 90% of them say that they want to look at video or play video or share video. And then if you ask how many of them do that, it's somewhere in the 2 to 5%. So there is kind of, there's a clear supply-demand imbalance right now. That has, you know, lots of different factors, everything from ecosystem to service to cost. But I guess the way that we were actually able to sell it, at least within the venture world, was basically the opportunity. And also looking at advanced markets. The U.S. is actually behind here. If you look at Asia and Europe, the amount of data usage, the amount of SMSs is, you know, it's tenfold in some, even more than tenfold in other countries. So it was really taking the trends from other countries, showing sort of the inbuilt latent demand in the U.S. market, and then talking about, you know, what could be, I guess.
And I think the user experience for these things, for these kind of tasks, has been the big hurdle. I mean, in a way, because you know, there's a generation of people who are willing to jump through hoops to get the kind of content that they want, and then there's, you know, myself, and I think some other folks who are less willing. You know, time is more at a premium, so user experience, until the user experience catches up. and lets people do things easily, I think they're going to have hurdles that
are an option. Yeah.
One more comment, just saying the whole space of these convergent devices. I mean, we're not getting to the point where there's going to be one device that does everything. We're going to have lots of devices that do something well, but then also interact with a whole ecosystem. I mean, camera, cell phones, MP3 players, whatever, all going to be web connected and all going to be able to do these mobile type applications.
And but share data.
Yeah, and share data, but they're going to do one thing well. And so when it comes time to design for this, what you need to do is figure out, hey, I'm putting something on a device that does something well. Does what I'm doing gel with that experience and extend it, or is it just, you know, shining an apple that doesn't need to be shined?
Yeah, that's actually a really important point. I mean, some of the things mobile does well is its immediacy and always on. I mean, a great example, and, you know, we may or may not like this, is, but if you look at the Saddam Hussein video clip and the Michael Richards clip and the students at UCLA getting tasered, those were all captured from a mobile device. And the Saddam Hussein is particularly telling in that there was a video camera that was filming that. It looked like a very kind of calm proceeding when he had his execution. Then there was the mobile one that was horrific, and it showed basically the difference between the two. The mobile one was immediately put up. It was shared across the web. It was also now started with different kind of networks, basically shared on mobile as well. And I think really part of, I guess, convincing kind of an ROI is that there's, you know, there's a different user proposition. If you want immediacy, and this phone, in this case, the phone is a way to, through capture, basically, to bring immediacy. That's a different experience than the web, and that's kind of one of the things that we look at also when we design things, is what is the web part of our experience good for, and then which is a lot of its creation and upload, and then what is the mobile experience good for, which is around immediacy and also personalization of assets.
All right, Denise, I'm going to give you one more shot.
Yeah, so just one, a couple really quick things. Business strategy, you know, that's not like a strength of mine, but I know that they really do. They do some business modeling and they do look at trends. But if you think about where the PC was before the web, you know, you lived in your own little world. Well, when the web came and open UIs came, everything just sort of started to take off. And now you can't even imagine a life without it. So, you know, I think the mobile space has that potential and then some, because your mobile phone goes everywhere with you. So from a business standpoint, sometimes that works as a good indicator. The other thing, though, is be honest. This is not for the faint of heart. It is not an easy task. There are a lot of, you know, anytime you get into the mobile space, you've got OEMs, you've got network providers, you've got content providers, you got Qualcomm and these other technologies. It can be a challenge. So it's not for the faint of heart.
That I want to thank our panelists, and most of all, thank you.